Radio Prague News. Health Minister Milada Emirova has been dismissed from office. Pakistan has taken up a Czech offer of humanitarian aid for earthquake-stricken areas, and the Lower House of Parliament is setting up a commission to investigate the privatization of the petrochemical firm Unipetrol. The Health Minister, Milada Emirova, has been dismissed from office and six of her deputies have offered to resign in connection with the cash flow problems in the health sector. Following a one-day strike by private physicians last week, Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek said that radical personnel changes would have to be made. As the crisis reached ahead, the government earmarked 3.8 billion crowns in emergency aid to help stabilise the cash flow problems. But critics of the government say the problem cannot be resolved without far-reaching structural reforms. Pakistan, which is dealing with the aftermath of a devastating earthquake, has taken up a Czech offer of humanitarian aid. A spokesman for the Czech Foreign Ministry said a special plane carrying a 15-member medical team would be ready to leave the Czech Republic around midday on Wednesday. The doctors and nurses are expected to join one of the field hospitals already working in the region. The plane will be loaded with sleeping bags, surgical equipment, medicine, food and items for disinfection and water purification. The Lower House of Parliament is setting up a commission to investigate the privatisation of the petrochemicals firm Unipetrol, going back to the company's founding in the early 1990s. The commission will have two members of each party represented in Parliament and should publish its findings by January the 31st of next year. The ruling Social Democrats are suspected of having taken bribes and sold Unipetrol to PKN Orlen of Poland under highly unfavourable conditions for the Czech Republic. A Polish parliamentary commission investigating the circumstances of the privatisation recently suggested that the Czech Republic had lost billions of crowns in the process. The Seychelles will not release fugitive billionaire Radovan Krejčíř, who is prosecuted for extensive fraud and conspiracy to murder in the Czech Republic. Seychelles authorities are cooperating with the Czech police on the case, but they have refused to extradite Krejčíř on the grounds that he is a Seychelles citizen. Krejčíř bought Seychelles citizenship back in 1996, a fact that has evoked criticism in the local press. He escaped to the Czech Republic this summer while the police were raiding his luxury villa. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news. You are tuned to Radio Prague and I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up, the health minister is sacked as the health crisis in the Czech Republic reaches ahead. Preparing for the worst, the authorities take precautions against the bird flu. And a Czech singer makes his mark in the English-speaking world. That and much more coming up. Don't go away. Minister Milada Emirova was sacked on Wednesday as the government struggled to defuse an ongoing crisis in the Czech healthcare system. Her removal comes a week after thousands of doctors held a one-day strike in protest at delays in payments from health insurance companies. Rob Cameron has the following report.
It's been called the job from hell. Certainly few ministers last more than a year or two in the post. In August 2004, Milada Emirova became the country's 11th health minister since 1989 and lasted, like most of her predecessors, just over a year. On Wednesday morning, a government spokeswoman confirmed that the 60-year-old minister had been removed to calm the situation in the health system. Her removal comes as a crisis in healthcare reaches ahead. On Tuesday, all six deputy health ministers offered their resignations in what they said was an attempt to ease the situation. A week earlier, thousands of doctors staged a one-day strike in protest in delays in payment from health insurance companies. They later demonstrated in front of the health ministry. Under the Czech healthcare system, both private practitioners and doctors working in the state sector rely on funding from health insurance companies, primarily the country's largest health insurer, VZP. They complain of having to wait up to 2 months for payment and predict that next year the waiting period could grow longer under new rules introduced by the health ministry. VZP, however, says it cannot help the delay because it itself is short of money. The insurer claims the health ministry orders it to pay doctors more than it receives in insurance payments. So both doctors and insurers have lined up against the health minister. In short, Milada Emerova made too many enemies. The minister's critics say she's failed to introduce proper reforms, choosing instead to maintain a rigid, centralized socialist system that is no longer tenable. Mrs. Emerova, a social democrat, swore that under her tenure, no patient would pay a single crown for a visit to the doctors. Many observers believe that is no longer possible. What is certain, however, is that the country's beleaguered health system can expect no fundamental reform before the next general elections in June next year. There is little any minister can do in less than 9 months, even less so when that minister will be appointed by a social democratic party which is edging ever closer to a largely unreformed communist party.
Rob Cameron, thank you for that. The Czech non-profit organisation, the Association for International Affairs, held a public discussion on Tuesday looking at differences in approach towards international terrorism between the United States and the European Union. Speakers were the editor of the right-wing National Review, John O'Sullivan, and French political scientist Dominique Moisy. For over an hour, the two discussed differences between the United States and the European Union since 9/11. But as Jan Wellinger found out, their discussion quickly shifted to Iraq. Well, Jan joins me now in the studio to share his impressions. So Jan, how did the debate go?
Daniela, it was actually a very lively discussion with many students interested in foreign policy attending. And speakers John O'Sullivan and Dominique Moisy got off quickly outlining differences between the U.S. and the European Union on terrorism. For example, Mr. Moisy argued that on 9/11, terrorists had, quote, struck the least prepared country in the world. I guess in terms of psychology, he compared the U.S. to Europe having grown used to terrorism in its own backyard. But then both men moved on to discussing Afghanistan and Iraq, where Europe and the U.S. have been involved, of course, with varying results. And on this point, especially Iraq, neither man was particularly optimistic. John O'Sullivan, for example, left the door open for some level of success in democracy there. But Mr. Moisy was even more bleak.
I do not see a positive outcome. I see various shades of grey, from dark grey to medium grey, but nothing else. Is the return to communitarist fighting. And now we see the Shiite fighting versus the Sunni, the Kurds moving away. We have set a bad precedent. I don't mean by that that I regret Saddam Hussein. I mean, he was an awful man. He was a baroque leader, and we have all played with him for much too long, as we did for decades.
Well, Jan, many analysts say that in trying to save Iraq, decision makers have been distracted from the broader challenge of fighting terrorism worldwide. Was there a feeling that the so-called war on terror is winnable at all?
Well, I think there, too, you would get different answers from both men. John O'Sullivan certainly thinks that the war on terror is winnable, and here's what he had to say.
I think you have to accept that this is a very long job, the loose structure of the Al-Qaeda terrorists. That makes it a very difficult fight. But on the other hand, I think that their actions, the actions of the terrorists, are alienating decent Muslims. And I think that provided that we behave sensibly and continue our cooperation, and provided we make it plain to Muslims that we regard them as fellow citizens, we want them to be part of our society, in fact, we want them to be more enthusiastically part of our society, then I think in the long run we'll win. But I don't think we should expect it to be an easy battle.
So, to sum it up, from Iraq to Al-Qaeda to terrorism in our midst, that seems a lot of ground was covered. What were the conclusions that visitors could take away from Tuesday's debate, if any?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the discussion, three things really came to the fore. That was the future of Iraq, terrorism in the West, and Muslim society in Europe. And by way of example, Czechs have a strong stake in the first two things, and the third to a lesser degree. The Czechs have, of course, contributed strongly to the reconstruction of Iraq. They're training police officers there to try to help them win the peace or keep the peace. And since 9/11, of course, Czechs, like everyone else, has felt the threat of terrorism. And recently here in Prague, we had exercises, emergency exercises, dealing with just that kind of eventuality. The third issue of identity and integration is one that Czechs have probably observed really from afar in neighboring countries like Germany or in countries like England and Holland, which have large Muslim populations and of which a certain part is radicalized. So they don't really feel that threat from within as much.
Jan Bellinger, thank you for that.
The World Health Organization is advising countries to prepare for a possible flu pandemic, which could be caused by bird flu in Asia. So far, the flu has been...
The United Nations Radio announcing that the World Health Organization is warning of a possible flu pandemic which could kill between 2 and 7 million people worldwide. Such a pandemic could break out if a bird flu virus crosses with human flu strains. With newly reported cases of bird flu in Eastern Europe, the Czech Republic, in line with the European Union, has taken precautions. Pavla Horáková reports.
Since 2003, bird flu has killed over 60 people and millions of birds in Asia. Scientists have warned that if the deadly H5N1 bird flu virus gets a chance to cross with human flu strains, it will become highly contagious, as no one will be immune to it. On Monday, the European Union announced an immediate ban on live bird imports from Turkey, where an outbreak of avian or bird flu was reported. Several cases were also reported in Romania. Josef Duben of the Czech State Veterinary Authority.
We stopped all imports of poultry, birds, eggs and feathers from Turkey, even though they were negligible. If the Romanian cases are confirmed as bird flu, we will comply with the European Commission's decision on similar bans, together with the rest of the EU.
Josef Duben says there is no reason to panic, but the state veterinary authority does not underestimate the importance of preventative measures, such as testing birds imported from third countries and more frequent checkups of farm poultry and wild birds, especially in areas where migratory birds could come in contact with the local bird populations. Meanwhile, countries around the world are building up stockpiles of antiviral drugs and working on bird flu vaccines. The Swiss company that produces the most effective antiviral drug available for avian flu is planning to double its production by 2005 over last year's levels. The Czech chief hygiene officer, Michael Wied, says, though, that there is no point in stockpiling drugs for 10 million Czechs before we know how a potential new virus would react to them. Mr. Wied, on the other hand, stresses the importance of vaccination against normal human influenza.
I would recommend for everyone to get vaccinated. Even vaccination from last year could alleviate the symptoms of this year's flu strain. But more importantly, if the population is sufficiently vaccinated, the human flu virus does not circulate in the population and therefore has less opportunity to cross with a bird flu strain and become transmittable from human to human. That's why not only we, Czech doctors, but also the EU authorities are calling on people to get vaccinated. It is one of the precautions against a global flu epidemic.
Only 6 to 7% of Czechs are vaccinated against human influenza, whereas in Western Europe it is over 20%. The chief hygiene officer, Michael Wied, says that once a new mutated strain emerges, it will take around 3 months to develop a vaccine against it. According to Mr. Wied, the health ministry is now in talks with pharmaceutical companies over supplies of the vaccine in case of a flu epidemic outbreak.
Pavla Horáková there, reporting on a closely watched topic here in the Czech Republic and, of course, around the world. Let's hope the worst-case scenario never comes about. Now, on to something more optimistic.
Spatřil jsem kometu, oblohou letěla. Chtěl jsem mi zaspívat, ona mi zmizela. Zmizela jako laň u lesa v remísku.
Jaromír Nohavica is one of the country's best-loved singer-songwriters. He is so popular that his concerts are always sold out, despite usually not being advertised at all. But not content with resting on his laurels here in the Czech Republic, the North Moravian singer has just embarked on a tour of cities in the English-speaking world. So far, Nohavica has appeared in Dublin and London. Nohavica's tour manager, Michal Žáček, told us who has been going to these concerts.
99% are Czech or Slovak people. It's the same in London and in Dublin. It's the same in all the world. Because Jaromír's songs are very specifically, because you must understand text.
Jaromír Nohavica's On the Road tour continues in Toronto on Thursday night, before a string of shows on the east coast of the United States. The size of local Czech communities was a factor in deciding on the tour's itinerary.
For example, Chicago is very known. There is a very big Czech and Slovak and Poland community. And we know it from our last USA tour, which we promoted 2 years ago.
Tour manager Michal Žáček says Nohavica really enjoys stretching himself a bit by playing in new places and decides what songs to play on the spur of the moment, depending on the audience.
He can feel atmosphere in the venue, and he's preparing a playlist for this special concert in the start of this concert. He will play first song, and he will feel atmosphere and people in the venue, and thanks to this, he is making playlist for the whole concert. Every concert is different. Every concert is very interesting.
Na hvězdném nádraží cinkají vagóny. Pan Kepler rozepsal nebeské zákony, hledal až nalezl v hvězdářských triédrech tajemství, která teď neseme na bedrech.
For dates and venues of Jaromír Nohavica's concerts, please go to www.nohavica.cz and click on Concerty. You are tuned to Radio Prague. In our regular series, Czechs Today, we introduce men and women from all walks of life. Some have made their mark here in the Czech Republic. Others live and work far away, but they're still conscious and proud of their roots. Kay Grigar's guest in this week's edition of Czechs Today is one of the latter.
In Czechs Today, I'm delighted to bring attention to Charlotte Kotek, the city. Energetic and quick on her feet, she encouraged me to stay for a meeting she had with an artist to discuss a future project.
Very slow. I'd take a pencil, draw a line, and wait till he finished it.
The painter is showing sketches of iconic figures, such as Vincent van Gogh, interpreted by an autistic student that he works with.
Just as quick, grab the color, the exact
Their conversation is just the beginning of creating a future exhibit.
He centers the image in such a precise way that I'm amazed at that.
Charlotte Kotek has been working at the Brooklyn Museum of Art since 1983. Along with promoting local artists and seeking fresh initiatives, she has curated numerous international traveling exhibitions. At the time of my visit, a retrospective of Jean-Michel Basquiat was on view at the museum. A Brooklyn-born and raised painter, he was the son of a Haitian-American father and a Puerto Rican mother. It led me to ask Mrs. Kotick, what does it take to be a curator in such a culturally and socially diverse community as Brooklyn?
It's a very interesting thing because, first of all, remember, I am one of the immigrants to Brooklyn, also being Czech. So in some way, I feel very much part and am seeking out different groups and artists from different backgrounds because I find it very interesting that we all can function within this one borough, within this one large New York. Obviously, it needs a bit of a sensitivity and understanding of a different cultural backgrounds, different traditions, different value systems, different feelings for, you know, family, neighbors, all these things which create the cultural pattern of each group. And again, this is very interesting. It's sort of a sociological work, which I find very exciting because I think ultimately art itself is very much an expression of these forces which create the individual, and all these forces are somehow growing out of this particular background.
What was it that made you decide to dedicate yourself to art and history of art?
I am afraid that it was not so much my decision. I think it was more genetic. Everybody in the family was involved with arts. I made sort of an attempt in my mind, more than factual, that maybe I will be doing something else. Maybe I will be studying chemistry. But it just didn't work out because I didn't have any abilities. The only thing which I knew, I wouldn't say well, but better, was the world of art, because my mother was a musician, my father was art historian, my aunt was art historian, my grandfather was a painter. So there was practically no escape.
Charlotte Kotick's background paved the way to her being a leader in New York City's complex art world. As a child, her parents were divorced, and she lived in what her family called the Women's Republic.
Brought up in the family of my grandmother, Bohumila Masarykova Slavíčková, and my aunt, Anna Masarykova, and my mother, Herberta Masarykova. And so we were four women living together. It was just women who happened to, you know, my grandmother was a widow, and my aunt wasn't married, and my mom was divorced, and I was just a baby. But, you know, we managed. And I think it made me also aware of the fact that, you know, one can be independent.
Her father, Emmanuel Pocha, was a well-known art historian and famed for writing a guide to Prague called Prague Step by Step, or Praho Krok za Krokem. His tireless work ethic and strict lessons were a great influence on Charlotte.
I visited with my father every weekend, and it was very instructive, it was very good, because he taught me a lot about A, discipline, and B, Prague, and C, he was attempting to teach me Latin. I mean, I was not a very good student, but he was trying to teach me inscriptions, Latin inscriptions on buildings and dates, and I remembered those until today, and it was very good. He also was very interested in decorative arts and modern, new decorative arts. He was very interested in modern glass and then contemporary glass and ceramics and textiles. He was a director of the Museum of Applied Arts, and so that was another sort of connection to contemporary culture.
Though Charlotte had rich relations with the artistic side of her family, growing up under the communist regime was difficult due to her political heritage. Her great-grandfather, Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, was a liberal leader and the first president of independent Czechoslovakia. She described feeling pushed to the edge of society under the regime. It wasn't until 5 years after she finished high school that she was allowed to enroll in night school while maintaining full-time work. She managed to complete her master's degree in art history with honors at Charles University in 1968.
It was tough because at that time we still worked on Saturday mornings, so it was really full work week, and then trying to do exams. I worked at the National Gallery at the time. And so full-time job and school, it was rough. It was rough. But again, I think maybe that was a good preparation for coming here and having to work sort of nonstop, as they say here, 24/7, which I'm doing all the time.
In January of 1970, Charlotte Kotick emigrated with her son Thomas to the United States. Her husband Peter had already been teaching music composition at the State University of New York in Buffalo. It was a very difficult decision to leave the rest of her family and her beloved Prague.
Leaving the country is good if country is in a great shape and you leave things in a good order. And if you leave something which is not in a good order, which is needed, which needs maybe a help, that one shouldn't leave. So I felt a little bit of a guilt of leaving precisely at the time, because I felt I should have stayed and made things better there. That was my responsibility. And also, I don't like to run. I don't like to walk away from things. Precisely for that reason, I would like to solve them. Sometimes they are not solvable by one person or one individual, but we all have to try, and walking away from things is not a solution.
Today, Charlotte Kotick keeps her feet in both countries, so to speak. She sits on the board of the Contemporary Art Center in Prague, and her youngest son, Jan, has moved back to the Czech Republic. He carries on the artistic tradition of the family as a visual artist.
The one who was born in Prague lives in Brooklyn, and then one who was born in Buffalo lives in Prague now. I felt fine about it. I just thought it's far. And in some way, I feel like now when we have a grandchild, I feel like fate is coming back. When my mother was so far when the children were growing up, it was very painful for her. I have a privilege I can travel back. She couldn't come and visit with us when we first came here. But still, it's far. I will not see those, you know, first steps.
And by some strange twist of fate, Brooklyn just happens to be the birthplace of Mrs. Kotick's great-grandmother, Charlotte Garrick Masaryk, the wife of the first president of independent Czechoslovakia, and the woman she was named after, making her story come round full circle. You've been listening to Czechs Today, presented by Kay Grigar. And this is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us and goodbye.
Posloucháte Rádio Praha, vysílání České